Merry Christmas, money buddies, and welcome to this week's episode of Money Talk. This week, we're talking about giving, financial independence, and generosity beyond the holidays. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming, and let's get talking. Today's conversation is going to be a great one, especially for Christmas. Today, we're talking about giving and generosity. And I wanted to time this episode specifically for Christmas because it's often a time of year where we are giving a lot, and you're going to hear us talk about that in today's interview, but we may want to continue our generosity past Christmas. So today's Money Buddy is going to help us understand how we can be more generous, how we can move our mindset into generosity, how we can practice generosity, and really build up a system that's going to allow us to give with intentionality, and we're going to talk about how that can impact our lives. Today's interview is a great one, so make sure you stay tuned and let's get moving into today's episode. Today's Money Buddy is Rebecca Herbst. Rebecca is a financial literacy advocate and an early retiree of the FIRE movement. She is the founder of Yield and Spread, a nonprofit that believes personal finance can be used as a force for good. They teach the ins and outs of investing and financial planning, but with a greater goal, to encourage people to give back and help others. They donate 100% of their proceeds to high-impact charities. And you're going to love today's interview. This was a fantastic one. Just got done recording it, and I know you're going to enjoy listening to it today. But this week's money talking points are, what does generosity mean to you? 2, how can you be generous without lots of money? And 3, how has giving impacted your life? I want to hear your thoughts on those money talking points, so please be sure to engage with the episode on Spotify or YouTube and leave a comment. But with those money talking points in mind, let's get talking and welcome Rebecca to the show.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, this will be fun. It's always exciting. It's the time of year, or actually we're just wrapping up the time of year where people are maybe a little more generous. And one of our questions will be, how do you give beyond the holidays? But I'm excited to tackle this question and talk about giving and generosity. And to start us off, what does generosity mean to you?
Yeah, so generosity to me is the simple concept of you care about others. You want to find a way to help others, and that you believe in some sort of sense that perhaps it's your obligation or duty to help others. And this could come in a few ways, shapes, and forms, but I'd say there's largely 3. The first being your time, right? You can dedicate your time to helping others, like showing up at a soup kitchen or somewhere else like that, where you're donating your time to dole out food and to speak with others, to connect with others. There's your skills. So for example, if you are a computer programmer or a website designer, you could be helping a nonprofit build out their website, right? So that's time plus a skill that you have. And the last is money, you know, your ability to monetarily support or fund a project or to support a charity or an individual.
Yeah, and you mentioned too right there of either just giving your time for maybe a simple task that they just need people to help with, or if you have a specific skill, you're giving it to a nonprofit. Are there other ways that you can be generous without having just a pile of cash behind you?
Yeah, I mean, I would ask you, like, when you say pile of cash, like, how would you define someone having lots of money when you ask that question?
Yeah, I guess you and I both come from like a financial independence mind space. And for me, I think that's the thing that it feels like that pile of cash would be financial independence to a point where my financial situation is okay.
So I think this is a question that I get a lot, like, how do I give away if I don't have lots of money? And I think there's a reframe around how much money do you actually have, and what sort of perhaps like financial scarcity mindset are you looking at? Because it is really hard, and especially in the FI community, when you've spent so much of your time accumulating wealth, it feels very scary to give that away. And I recognize that and appreciate that and have felt that myself too. So, like, to put it in a global context, though, if you earn $69,000 a year after taxes, you are in the top 1% of global income earners in the world.
Wow.
So that means you are 99% richer than the world's population. And it probably doesn't feel that way when, like, your buddy is making more than you or your colleague is making more than you. It's hard to actually feel this and to recognize that statistic. So hopefully that stat alone is enough to like get the wheels turning in someone's brain. Like, oh, actually, like, what is this concept of lots of money? Mm-hmm. And then the second piece I think is really around that scarcity mindset that I just mentioned, which is like, you know, being on a path to FI is a really good like metric for how financially secure you are. So if you have six figures in your portfolio and you have a 20% savings rate, you're doing really, really well. And in the scheme of FI, you're like just constantly saying to yourself, well, I don't have 25 times my annual expenses saved up and invested. So you're constantly almost being like preached, like I don't have enough. Mm-hmm. I'd like to kind of break that mindset and say, actually, you're well on the path to FI. You see a path forward. I think that there could be room for others. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're that person making 60K a year and you were to say, donate 1% of your income, that's $600, that's $50 a month. When you break it down like that, I think it seems very doable. So I'd like to kind of reframe that question of how can you be generous without lots of money? Because my thought process is probably most of your listeners do have, have lots of money relative to the world's population.
Yeah. And when you put it in that sort of perspective, it makes it a lot easier to give away that 1%, 5%, or 10%, whatever it might be. But one of the things you were talking about there is if you're on the path to financial independence and you have that 20% savings rate or whatever it may be, maybe you're not at 25 times your expenses, maybe you're at 20 times. And guess what? That's so much farther along than the average American. You're going to be just fine. And it brings up the saying that I kind of like to throw out there is, if your worst case scenario is better than most other people's best scenario of retiring on time and maybe getting to retire at 70 or whatever, but you're retiring at 60 because you decided to give some money away along the way, I think you're going to be okay. And we kind of need to realize the privileged position that being able to save so much money and, like you said, having an income that's higher than 99% of the rest of the world, like that puts you in a position where you need to recognize that you can still give money away.
And I think it's really hard to see that when you're in that wealth accumulation stage. You know, there's been a big push reading the book Die with Zero in the personal finance community. Mm-hmm. The concept that like, okay, we're working towards building this portfolio that we could withdraw down 4% on. But the reality is like, we know that the data says that retirees who have 500 or more in their retirement account on average, or actually on median, only spend on 12% of that money. So if you actually start running like the simulations for yourself, like you'll see that in most scenarios, it's very, very, very hard to draw down on that portfolio completely. Like I've been amazed just looking at the numbers for my portfolio recently, and it's encouraged me to start giving away more. But what I'd say is like, I think it's really hard to just say, okay, I'm going to just start doing this and I'm just going to start giving away money because Rebecca Herbst from Yield and Spread, you know, and Die with Zero told me that I can do this, which is why I think like habit formation is really important. Yeah. And it's totally fine to start small. It's totally fine with the idea of starting with like that $50 a month. And like building up a habit towards that. Like I imagine someone starts working out at the gym, they don't just start going like for an hour a day, 5 days a week. You probably have like a program and a structure behind it. So that's really what I've been trying to do with Yield and Spread is like create a structure and a system for people to begin experimenting with this so it doesn't feel as overwhelming and as fearful and that people can start to make a dent and see a difference. And like, you know, quite frankly, I think most people will find that if they're in a good financial position, they start giving money away, they really won't miss that money. Mm-hmm. It's just my anecdotal take.
Yeah. And if you're giving the money to your community, you're likely going to see stuff like pop up that's going to benefit you. Like maybe you love pickleball, so you want your city to install a pickleball court, so you pay for it. Like, right? Like there's those sort of things that maybe you have enough money to do that. And I love the idea of practicing with this and not trying to ramp it up to giving away $100,000 in one single year, because yeah, that'll be seemingly very difficult to just suddenly essentially like just let that money go, right? And work your way up to it. I was listening to a conversation with some financial advisors recently that were talking about like, there's a problem with retirees spending money. And it's kind of in a similar vein of their money just keeps going up, right? There's no possible way that they're going to be able to spend down this portfolio that they've built. And they were talking about how they might not want to travel because they don't want to pay for a plane ticket. And the advisor's like, you could charter a private jet and you'd be okay. If you're to that point, yeah, you got to work up to actually being able to give your money away. But I think practice is a huge piece of that. And I think people underestimate just starting small and how much momentum that can build.
Yeah. And I praise those like financial advisors, by the way. I find personally that one of the most difficult groups to talk to about philanthropy is the 60 plus group that has never given anything away and is now exploring doing it. And I think most people tend to think that that's actually the group of people that give the most because they are getting towards the end of their lives, hopefully not at 60, but you know, they're getting older, they're realizing how much money they have, but they've also spent 60 years without a stem or structure. And so I think actually those conversations can be really hard. It can be really hard to move the ball. And so I actually think not waiting until you're 60 to start exploring this now is really important. And then when you do get to that age, you can really double down on that strategy and act upon it more quickly.
Yeah. And we're moving into some of the ways that people can start to practice giving money away. So I want to jump ahead to some of those questions, but we're going to skip our third money talking point here, but I want to give it to the audience for them to go and discuss with their family and friends. And that's just, how has giving impacted your life? So everyone listening, take that question and go pose it to your family and friends with this podcast episode and start a conversation around giving money, especially on Christmas as we move out of the holidays and into a time where we got to get back to normal, right? We can continue giving, but I want to move us into this next question here. You mentioned a scarcity mindset. How do we get our mind wrapped around and into a place where we're okay to give this money away?
Yeah, this is a good question. I want to answer it in two parts. So the first is, I'll just share personally, like how I got my mindset into a place of wanting to give versus just being in the scarcity mindset. A big shift in the way that I began thinking about giving was I started like researching concepts of social activism, philanthropy, morality. And I ended up reading this book called The Life You Can Save by Peter Singer. And in the book, Peter Singer makes the argument that we, affluent people born into countries with systems of safety and structure and wealth and the ability to build wealth, have an obligation to give back to the world extremely poor that do not have the same privileges. So there are millions and millions and millions of people across the world living on less than $2.15 a day. So 8.5% of the world's population is living on less than $2.15 a day. I bought a coffee for that this morning. That was three times that. Okay, so I think that alone is jarring, but numbers and statistics are hard to understand. So the second piece of it is like, okay, how can I help these people, right? So if I'm going to donate those $50, which I talked to you about earlier, I could donate it to building a pickleball court, as you said, which could be really fun. Love pickleball, all about it. But think about how big of an impact $50 goes to someone living off of $2 a day. I mean, that's a month's living expenses for them. And by the way, those living expenses aren't like they're going to the mall. It's like basic survival food, needs. Yeah. Yeah. So think about how transformative that could be for someone. And so in the book, Peter Singer gives all these examples of how your dollar can go the furthest. And it made me move from this mindset of where should I give? What problems areas should I give to? What charities should I give to this place of, okay, if I give my money to causes, which are very well researched and designed to be high impact, I actually have a very strong degree of confidence that the money that I give away will do good. So in the context of personal finance, if I'm in the wealth accumulation phase and I'm going to not put a dollar into Vanguard's total stock market index fund and I'm going to give it away, I sure as heck want to know it's going to something good. So Singer outlines kind of this methodology for how to evaluate charities and how to know that your money is going towards the most good it can do. So that confidence really, really helped me. So as for the second piece, I think this goes back to what I was saying earlier, which is just habit building, right? So unless you experience something, you're going to have fear around it. So like when I first pulled the early retiree trigger, it's like almost 6 years ago now, which is crazy. Like I have not earned an active income in six years. So just, you know, living that FIRE lifestyle. But the first month or two where I was actually clicking sell on my portfolio and withdrawing from it for the first time was really scary. And now I don't think about it at all. And so I think it's the same thing when you click a donate button. Right. So I'm not asking you to go out there and just click donate $10,000. Get in the habit of giving $50 away a month. Get in the habit of like clicking those buttons. And so what I would say is, if you can come up with a system, and this is the simple one that I recommend, which is, one, be proactive about the causes you want to give to and the charities you want to give to. So research upfront. Like, don't wait for someone to come up to you on the street and say, hey, will you donate to my cause? Be proactive about picking the charities. Maybe you pick one, maybe you pick three. Then you know, okay, this is the charities that I'm focusing on for the most part for the remainder of the year. So you have that set up. The second is deciding, okay, how often am I going to donate? I recommend at minimum monthly, because it creates that habit. If you wait till December or Giving Tuesday or Christmas, you're doing that once a year. It's really hard to keep that habit. So try doing something monthly, or it could be in line with something that you do already. Like, for example, I have a personal finance meeting with my husband every month. That's when we just do our donations. Then the third is, you know, deciding what you want to donate. You can donate cash, you can donate stock, you can open a donor advised fund and donate from that. But if you're just starting out, just, and then there's small amounts of money, there's not a lot of tax optimization here anyway. So just focus on like that $50 cash donation a month. And then lastly, give yourself a chance to reevaluate. Put time on your calendar once every 6 months and say, okay, how do I feel about that money? Do I miss it? How do I feel about the charities that I'm donating to? Do I want to reevaluate those? So just having the simplest structure in place will take some of the stickiness and the friction out of this.
Yeah, and it makes it a whole lot easier if you like commit to it, commit to talking about it, commit to a charity. And I like what you said there about monthly, because not only is monthly good for us on a habit front, but it's also really good for the charity, because then it's a consistent stream of income for them to use. They're not just waiting around for your $20,000 donation when they could have used $500 of it a few months ago if you would have just broken it up over a monthly. So it's also extremely helpful on the donation front. And as far as taxes go, it's kind of more difficult, especially if you're just getting started, to get to a point where there's truly a tax benefit because of the high standard deduction. But if you're just getting started, don't worry so much about the taxes. And if you're just trying to give money away purely for the tax reason, you're maybe missing the mark a little bit. Like, yes, there can be tax benefits, but don't donate money just because of the tax benefits. Research the charities and have some like real connection with them. And also, another thought that I had was, you talked about high impact charities and charities where the dollar is going the furthest. And I think that's also a great way for all of us in the financial independence mind space, where we want our dollars to earn the highest return. Like, your dollar is essentially giving the highest return in essence there. And that could be a good way to still give your brain that like hit of energy that it needs to think that your money's doing good, right? Because your dollar is going to an entire month of someone's living expenses. And the thing that I thought about there as well was going towards, maybe there's some guilt around giving because you give to your local community that maybe doesn't really need it. And then you start thinking about, oh, there's these extreme poverty situations I could have been giving to. How do you stick to your donation strategy when maybe there could be a little bit of guilt or like just indifference on how you're giving money?
I want to be clear that I don't think it has to be an either or, like you either give locally or you either give to high impact. Like, first of all, you could be giving to a local charity that is very impactful. You could be giving to a charity that supports people in sub-Saharan Africa that's also impactful. So it doesn't have to be either or. And so I'm not here saying that, you know, stop giving to your local food shelter if they do good work. I would encourage people to come up with a strategy where understanding, knowing that they're having an impact, but also trying to navigate the sort of the emotional connection. So like a simple way around that could just be 50-50, like half of your giving is local to causes that you feel really connected to, and half of your giving is going to something that you sure as heck know is doing good stuff. And the reality is, if you're a small charity, it's very, very hard to do rigorous research on the impact of your work. Like if you're a four-person team locally, it's very, very hard. So you're sort of more leaning on these like anecdotal stories, and like emotional connections and these sort of experiences that you can have side by side. So I think blending the two could be a really smart way about going about it. The other kind of element here that you can add into is, if you're feeling sort of these feelings of guilt, is you can come up with a giving strategy where a big piece of it is proactive. So you're researching those charities, you're understanding the impact that you can have, and then part of your giving strategy could be some of those reactive things. So some people feel guilt when they open up their news portal and they see a huge disaster going on, or they see someone on TikTok like experiencing something traumatic, or they see someone on the street asking them for money. Obviously, you don't want to be in a position where you've just researched your two or three charities and then you say no to anyone who asks you for money or support. And by the way, if you do choose to say like, look, I've really researched these charities and these are the ones I'm giving to you, and right now I don't have a budget to be able to like give to this ask, but I will look more into it, that is completely fine. But I think doing something like, okay, 80% or 90% of your giving is structured, 10 or 20% of your giving is reactionary, my hope is that can free up some of that space. I think the concept of guilt like is a tough one. I mean, I give in a meaningful and structured way, but I still see people suffering and it still hurts me and makes me very upset. But I think that having a plan does begin to tackle this concept of guilt, and at least putting some effort behind it is better than just like sitting and wafting in your own feelings and not doing anything about it.
Yeah, like the struggle is always going to be there, but at least at the end of the day, if you have a strategy around giving, you can rest with some confidence that you're like, no, I am giving money away to something that's impactful. Yes, it stinks that I couldn't give money to like X charity that sent me something in the mail that needs some help right now, but there is stuff that I'm doing that is helping out there. Like you can still have some confidence in that. And I guess that also heads towards the whole like at checkout at every single store trying to donate to charity. That one's always a little bit of a tough one, but if you have a strategy where you're giving money in a real way, you can easily turn those down and be like, no, I have a plan for my money and I know what I'm doing with it. And I like the idea of balancing it as well.
Yeah, that's actually the most common example of where it alleviates guilt for me. Cause like, you know, the cashier turns the thing around and goes, do you want to donate to all these, you know, these pets that are suffering in your local community? And I'm like, of course I want to help whoever I can. And this cashier is like looking at me and I'm like, are they judging me? Right. And so I think that's actually a really good example of where, by the way, if you feel compelled to round up, like you can, it's actually a really successful marketing campaign, has helped a ton of charities. So there's nothing wrong with that, but it does give you the freedom to say, okay, look, I'm focused on these cause areas. And when I say cause areas, I mean climate change, homelessness, animal abuse, right? Like, and then also subsequently like the charities that are associated with the cause areas that you care about.
Yeah. And if one pops up that is a charity that you're committed to, then maybe you do give a roundup or a dollar in some, and because you know it's a cause that's connected to what you care about. And yeah, guilt can be a tricky spot in the giving space, especially if you are giving money, because you're like, it can be so conflicting, but you can overcome it, build a real strategy around all this, and it'll be a little bit easier. But there is some stuff that this personal finance community that we're a part of gets wrong about charitable giving. What do you feel like that is? What do you think we need to be doing better at?
So in light of the personal finance community, and like maybe I'll speak specifically to the FI community, I think that there's been these different stages, which is one, like the first stage is make as much money as possible, spend as little money as possible, save as much as possible, and hit early retirement as fast as possible. I think we're now in an era of what does money mean to you? How do you use money as a tool to lead a meaningful life? How do you use it to achieve different goals? I think it's a really beautiful time for the FI community. I think it's also very focused on like self-help and self-betterment, which is very in vogue right now in general. I do think that the third phase of the FI movement and what I'm hoping to push for with Yield and Spread and with the philanthropy pledge, which is this public pledge to give a percent of your income to charity, is a move towards generosity. And like what 10 years from now, what will the legacy of the FI community be? Will it be just like a bunch of like hacking models? Will it be like, there's over 2 million followers of FIRE on Reddit, right? So like, will it just be a bunch of people who left their jobs and sat around on the beach? Or or will it be a bunch of people who left their jobs and just started side hustles because they weren't sure what to do with their time? And I know so many people in the FIRE community who are incredible and generous and amazing, but I do think it's interesting to see what our legacy will be outside of just self-betterment and spending our time exactly how we want to, which is a lovely perk of five. But I think that there's a little bit more to that. And so I think the majority of the conversations that we have in the personal finance community now, or what I see on five podcasts and five blogs, are around this like tax optimization of giving. And usually the conversation in the personal finance community is around like itemizing your deductions, is around opening up a DAF, is around qualified charitable distributions. I think there's nothing wrong with that. But I do think the conversation should be led with, how are we having an impact as a community? What do we stand for? And I think there's already all these undercurrents of generosity. I mean, how generous are people in the FI community with their time? You run this podcast. Yeah. Most of this information that was blocked behind a paywall 10 years ago is now open and free and to the public. If you ask anyone I know in the FI community, hey, will you give me 30 minutes of your time to talk about X? They will for free. Mm-hmm. So I think there's such a spirit of generosity. Is there a world in which we can take this to a monetary stance, and knowing that anyone who's reaching FI in their 40s or 50s is probably in a really, really good place to at least give something away.
Yeah. And then once you actually reach that early retirement, you start focusing on all these other areas like your health, and you're able to still continue giving your time away, and you're able to just be a more active participant. And I think about that legacy and like the evolution of financial independence, because I've been doing this podcast for 4 years. So I feel like it's kind of a long enough time that I've started to see how teaching about money has changed over the last couple of years. And it's definitely moving in that direction of money being a tool. And what does money mean to you? And what do you want to accomplish with money versus just money is the goal. The 25 times my spending is the goal. Now it's more of like, oh, I want to be able to help my family get into their first home, or help my kids go through college because I have the money to be able to do that. So I feel like the evolution is moving towards a tool, like you said. And then, yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what the next evolution is, because if you have this large community of millions of people who have retired early, like, one, what happens to the job space if we all retire? But also, like, what do all those people do with all that money they've accumulated? Do they use it to build up these communities where they want to live and make it a better place to live? Like, what do we do with all this money? There's a lot that we need to consider. And it's really exciting to see you on the forefront and pushing for all of this, to say, hey, let's start thinking about this now as our money continues to grow and we're getting up there in age or whatever, right? As these retirement communities age and financial independence becomes an older stance, what do we want to do with all this money we have? So there will be a lot of fun conversations to have over the next 5 to 10 years as our portfolios just continue to go up, right? Like, that's what happens, is our money's going to keep going up. What do we do with it? But like I mentioned, this episode is coming out on Christmas, so everyone's getting to hopefully listen to this right on Christmas or shortly after, and they're thinking, wow, I just finished spending a ton of money on everyone and giving money away, and what do I do with my money now? How do people continue to give beyond the holidays? I'm sure building that system is a huge part of this, but what do we do to continue that generosity past Christmas?
Yeah, so I do think that Giving Tuesday and the holidays is a beautiful time where we see a huge uptick in generosity, which is wonderful. It also puts a really huge stress on nonprofits to focus on pushing out these certain messages at these times, focus on filling funding gaps within a 2 to 3 week time period. Stretches people really thin. And so you mentioned this earlier, Skylar, it's hard for the charities to get a lump sum at one time in the year. It's easier for them to predict giving. So on the whole, if you care about the charities that you're giving to, more regular giving and consistent giving is better for that. My recommendation to all of you is to please explore the philanthropy pledge with Giving What We Can. It's powered by the Giving What We Can team in partnership with Yield and Spread, the nonprofit I run. And there are 10,000 people, over 10,000 people, who have taken a 10% income pledge. That means they're giving 10% of their income every year, regularly and consistently, through the rest of their working career, and some even beyond their whole lifetime. So I definitely recommend exploring that. The trial pledge means that you can give as low as 1%, and you can start for a time period like 6 months. So I think that is a really good starting point for anyone listening to this call. Like, can you give 1% of your income for 6 months and see how you feel? I wouldn't be surprised that if someone's already listening to this podcast, given like the title that's out there, they probably have some sort of inclination to give. they probably are giving already. There's a world in which maybe you're doing that already and you just don't even know. And so using the language like, wow, I donate 1% of my income, I think is a really powerful tool and a reframe. Mm-hmm. So I'd consider a pledge, the value being you're making that commitment, you're joining a community of people. So like surrounding yourself with people that are doing this, you can learn and understand what sort of charities they're giving to, financially, how they're giving money away. And then also helping to like normalize that culture. So I think regular, consistent giving, and then going back to that model of what I talked about earlier with the four steps, which was one, identify the charities you want to give to up front. Two, identify how often you want to give monthly. Three, identify what you want to give, cash, stock, et cetera. And then four, give yourself an opportunity to reevaluate. So that is my recommendation. Just try. And by the way, if doing a percentage feels so crazy, start out just with like that nominal $50 mm-hmm. that we talked about and just give it a go and track those donations, like whether you use a spreadsheet or Monarch Money. For me, it's really incredible to look at like all the donations I've made over the past 5 years mm-hmm. and to see all the good that I've done. I also often like check in with the charities that I'm donating to like just get a sense of like where my money is going or how it's going. I don't really have to check in that often, by the way, because the charities that I donate to do a great job of reporting back to me, and your charity should do as well. Mm. So all those things like that commitment, that celebration, that culture that comes through regular giving. I really encourage most of you to explore, at least explore what this could mean for you.
Yeah, that's just even starting, yeah, if you can't do the 1%, do $50, do $100. Do something that's maybe just right around that 1%, but commit to a dollar amount because that can be a little easier to wrap your mind around than this like slightly changing percentage if you're just getting started with this. I love the idea that this whole time we've been talking about practicing and getting into the groove of donating money, and then there's the pledge, but then there's also the trial, like practice pledge of just getting started with this habit, because it can be really tricky to just jump into anything, let alone giving our money away, spending money, saving money, any of those different aspects of what we can do with our money is hard to just jump right into. And I do want to hear a little bit about your story as we're heading towards the end of our time here. I want to hear from you, how has financial independence and being able to retire early helped you move towards a more generous mindset?
Like I mentioned earlier, I haven't earned a true form of active income in the past 6 years since I pulled the early retiree trigger at 32. That also goes for my husband. So I would say, you know, I don't know everyone who's involved in the FIRE world, but I think that there's very, very few people that actually like left their jobs in their 30s, both people,
yeah,
and are exploring what it means to actually live off of their portfolio. I think we both can agree that like most people tend to sort of earn income still, mm-hmm. or
yeah, one more year, start some side hustle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Cause you want to be purposeful and meaningful. So we are truly like living, I guess, the prescribed recipe. My portfolio is much larger than it was when I first left my job.
Which is and crazy. I have been, it's been 6 years.
I know, it's crazy. And I'm acting on the 4% rule. And I just moved from a low cost of living city to a high cost of living city, and I'm spending the most on rent than I ever have in my life. I also have a toddler and he's going to daycare for the first time. So I'm spending more than I ever have. So I guess I'm just here as an example of saying like, I'm someone who's actually increased my spending over the past 6 years, because at first I was obviously very nervous and spent way below the 4% because mm-hmm. I just was like, wow. No active income. How am I doing it for the first time? And then also over that 6 year time period, we have evaluated our donations and sort of consistently doubled it each year. So I've taken that same approach of like starting at the 1% giving and upping it over time. This year we decided, hey, we don't think we're in a position to double our donations simply because we are spending more than we ever have. Mm-hmm. We probably could, but let's just give ourselves some breathing room to just experience this and feel this. So I think not earning an active income and actually like living the recipe of the FIRE lifestyle has enabled me to really be very thoughtful about how much money I can give away. I'm also very cognizant of this like nest egg that I'm sitting on, which is fueling this passive income generator, if you will.
Yeah.
But I'm aware that this portfolio is larger than it was. We, of course, been in like a very strong time of stock market growth. But I'm aware that I'm sitting on this nest egg. And so my husband and I have actually made a commitment to donate 80% of our net worth upon our death.
Wow.
My hope is to do this soon, do some of this giving away sooner than that. Because I just think that the wealth that we're building in our portfolio, like how much does my children really need from this, right? So I think FI has really given us a system and structure to look at this. It's put us in a place of immense privilege. Like who gets to do this? Who gets to just like do whatever they want? It's incredible. And allows us to play. And also I'm trying to be kind to myself in this process. Like I want your listeners to be kind to themselves. Like I'm experimenting with the concept of donating regularly and meaningfully, and I'm experimenting with the concept of making large cash donations from my nest egg. And I'm not doing it all at once because I want to be smart about money, but I also know that I want to make a difference. So I just say like, you know, it's okay to iterate. It's okay to explore. It's okay if you don't figure this out within the hour after listening to this episode. Yeah. That it's a process and you'll learn about yourselves and you'll learn about how to have an impact.
Yeah. And I just hope that everyone takes from this episode hearing that it's okay to donate money, right? Like even while you're in that saving phase, maybe your retirement date becomes 1 year later, but the charity you were able to impact completely changes the lives of a bunch of people that they're working with. Like you also have to think of the flip side of how your money is being used, and you can find impactful charities that connect with the causes that you care about. Like if there's so much impact, what's one more year, right? Like you may end up working the one more year anyways, because you're a little scared to retire. Maybe your portfolio will be fine in the long run if you're still giving some money away. And I love the picture that you painted there of like, hey, we have more money than we need, and we're in a position where we get to really do whatever we want. Let's help some other people out. And I think moving to that point where now money for you is a tool to be able to help other people, that's such a cool point to get to. So I appreciate hearing the story, and I'm glad this episode timed out to come out on Christmas so we can get people excited to keep giving into the new year. But Rebecca, thank you so much for coming on. I have two final questions here for you. Tell us a little bit about your nonprofit. Where can they go to find it or learn more about you?
Yeah. So listeners can go to yieldandspread.org/moneytalk. So you can learn more about Yield and Spread, the philanthropy pledge. Skylar, you just brought up the concept of, oh, maybe I have to work one more year. We actually came up with something called the philanthropy calculator, where you can actually put in your very own financial information, list what you maybe like to make as a pledge, like 1%, 2%, 3%, and it actually outputs the actual impact to your FI timeline. Cool. So for all you know, it could actually be much less than a year.
Probably
you'd be
is.
Surprised. Yeah. And we also have a bunch of other free resources relate to giving, but also a lot of which relate to investing and personal finance. So please go ahead and check that out. You can also see more about my personal story there, in addition to all the many resources that we have.
Fantastic. And that link you mentioned will be in the show notes. So go click on that and head over to the nonprofit and check it out. But one final question I have for you here is, if you were to go back to the very beginning, like the very early, you just discovered financial independence, what's one thing about generosity that you wish you had known from that point?
I wish I knew that there were other people out there giving meaningful sums of money away that were not just super rich people.
Yeah.
I wish I knew about these 10,000 people who were giving regularly, because once I involved myself in that community and was able to see like how successful, how thoughtful, how impactful these people are, I just think I would have felt much more comfortable, much less fearful about going down this path. I think it's like the same for the FIRE community. I remember I was reading all these blogs and reading all these books, and I told my boyfriend at the time, he's now my husband, I said, I need to meet someone who's done this. And I went to a local Choose FI meetup, and there was this guy, Tim, there, who is in his early 30s, and he had achieved FI. And in seeing him and meeting him personally, like seeing him, I was like, okay, I can do this. So I think the same is true for giving. Like, we kind of shy away from talking about it with each other. It's almost perceived to be more virtuous if done anonymously. But I think exposing myself to these concepts and not being scared of them really helped unravel a lot of the fear-based thinking that I had early on.
Yeah. And we talked about that right before we started, about the power of community. And everyone needs to realize that if you can get connected with people who are trying to do something similar, it becomes so much easier. You can ask them questions, you can get motivation from them, or you can see that it's frankly even possible. Maybe you think your idea is insane, right? Like, you think this whole FIRE concept is insane, but then you go meet someone who did it on maybe a lesser salary and you're like, wow, yeah, I can totally do this. So I love the plug there at the end for just go and be a part of a community that's doing what you want to do. And you're going to just leave empowered and motivated to continue doing it. So, Rebecca, thank you so much for coming on. This has been a fantastic conversation.
Thank you, Skylar.
Thank you so much to Rebecca for coming on the podcast. I want to wrap up here with the last money talking point that we didn't get to and talk about one other thing to close out the show here. The money talking point that we didn't get to was, how has giving impacted your life? I want to hear your answer to this question. Leave a comment on YouTube or Spotify. Tell me how giving has impacted your life. And then go share the episode and have a conversation with a family member or a friend, because this is a fun thing to talk about. And I think for me, one of the greatest things is when you can see your impact having an impact in someone else's life, and you can see your money being used in an impactful way. It's one of the coolest things. So let me know what you think about giving and how has it impacted you. The other thing I want to touch on here at the end is community. I think it's something that's super undervalued. Rebecca and I, before we recorded, we were talking about how tricky it can be to start up a community and really get people to engage with it. But I think it's one of the most underpowered things that we can do with our time, is be involved with other people. And just like you heard Rebecca mention, she was then empowered to chase financial independence because she had seen someone who had done it for real. She had seen someone who had actually done it. And I think we often undervalue the power of talking to other people, because I think once you go out and talk to other people in community groups, you're going to either be empowered and excited to chase the path that you want to chase, or you might figure out pretty quickly that it's not the path you want to chase. But either way, joining a community and being a part of a group of people is going to help you see what you want to do in your life and help you feel motivated, because so often we sit in our own little bubble and we don't do anything due to fear and anxiety and stress around making a decision and moving forward. And then we go talk to someone and they encourage us and they get us motivated and excited to go do it. And then we do it and we're usually all the better off for it. So that's my last thing for this episode, is to find a community to join and stay involved. And that does it for episode 211. Can you believe we're on 211 episodes of Money Talk? What a fantastic episode that was. Thank you so much for listening. We covered a lot today, from how you can change your mindset to a place where you're willing to give, to how your financial independence journey is going to be okay if you start giving away money now. And make sure you check out the link in the show notes to head over to Rebecca's nonprofit Yield and Spread to check out their philanthropy pledge and consider joining that. But what do you think the next evolution of financial independence is? That was kind of a question that we teased out a little bit. I think it'll be really fun and interesting to see how FI plays out and changes over the next 5 to 10 years. But that does it for today's episode. Thank you for listening to today's episode. The best way to stay up to date and connected to all things Money Talk is to subscribe to the podcast. Have a question or comment? You can find links in the show notes to email me or leave a comment on Spotify or YouTube. And if you're looking to get started with budgeting, sign up for a Money Talk today. I'd love to work with you and help you with your budgeting. The link is in the show notes. And if you're a young adult or know one in your life who could benefit from some great financial planning advice, check out Financial Planning for Young Adults right where you're listening to this show. And remember that the best way to learn from today's episode is to go and have a money talk about today's topic with a fellow money buddy. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Money Talk. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk. This show is provided for informational and entertainment purposes and may not be specific to your unique situation. Please be sure to do additional research before making any financial decisions.